Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good morning. We have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping back. She's a pro now. How many times have you been here?
Like, I don't know.
26 times.
It feels something. Like 100.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
I'm certainly glad to be back. It's, it's always fun to come in here. And I always wonder on my way here, what are we going to talk about today?
I do, too.
And it is almost never what I was thinking about whenever I drive in the morning. So I'm excited to see what unfolds today.
That's what I think as well. And the reason that is that we don't know is because we cannot be inside the minds of the people who call into the show and make it what it is.
That's right.
So we are going to ask you to use your mouth to tell us and ask us the questions that you have. The number to call and do that is 314-436-7900. You also have the option of an 800 number. Dial the 1. It's 1-800-925-1120. Again, the local number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline with your questions for Michelle Reeser-West. Michelle, what's going on at Pointer right now?
Right now we are doing a lot of office-y things. So it's really, January is a time for us to kind of get all of our ducks in a row for the upcoming season. We do have some crews out, not last week because of the temperatures. They were pretty dang cold, so we didn't do a lot of outside work. But we do have crews out and about doing hardscaping projects, drainage projects. We have some construction projects. We try to keep, a lot of projects like that that aren't necessarily plant-related, so that we can keep some of our crews busy through the winter. But there's a ton to do out in the garden that doesn't necessarily have to do with plants right now. So that's kind of what we're focusing on.
For example?
In my world, I'm, getting with our maintenance clients and trying to make sure that, we have a plan for them and what they're looking for the year. Our staff in the maintenance department are checking in with all of those clients saying, hey, it's January right now, but before we know it, our season's going to be starting with the maintenance staff. Do you want some annuals planted this spring or summer? Do you want, any additional plantings? Can we spruce up an existing bed? Can we, can we offer you an additional service? So it's a time for us right now to check in with our ongoing clients and kind of get their plan of action together for the full season of maintenance that we perform for them.
And if you want to be a new client, you probably got to get hopping, right?
Yeah, I would definitely get hopping. So we've sent out kind of all of our notices to our existing clients, and they kind of get like first priority with our scheduling, but we still have a ton of open spots. But if you're looking for professional help in your garden in regards to maintenance, I would definitely get on the phone to Pointer Landscape or any other landscape company that offers that service, because they are, I guarantee you, they're super busy right now in the office getting their schedule set for, we do a lot of dormant pruning in February. We do some dormant spraying on some trees and shrubs in February, and then March we start really hot and heavy on pruning and grass cut back and all, and just general cleanup of, you know, leaf, and we'll start mulching, you know, once the weather starts cooperating a little bit. But we already have most of our March is full. We have some openings in April. So I suspect that most of our other counterparts out there in the maintenance world are having similar things. So if you're looking for some help this spring, I would definitely reach out soon.
I have a friend who's kind of shy.
Yeah.
She doesn't like calling into the program, but she has a couple of questions that she wanted to share and ask you. One of the questions is about winter sowing.
Okay.
I don't know anything about winter sowing, and I don't think it has anything to do with clothing.
Probably not.
I'm guessing.
I mean,
it has to do with growing plants or herbs inside during the winter and then replanting them outside?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's a lot of what's happening in my basement right now. So I have a whole little setup where I have started a little bit of seeds. It's still, I think, a little early for most of them right now. But there are a lot of herbs and cold season leafy greens that can be started right now. But basically, you know, now is the time to start thinking about what you're going to sow this winter and get the supplies started. You know, it's a great time, even if you're not ready to, because it's still a little too early for tomatoes and things like that. But it's a great time to start getting your supplies ready. I didn't, shamefully, I did not clean any of my supplies last spring. I just kind of stuck them in a bucket or a Rubbermaid container and said I would do that later. So I had to get out, you know, my trays that I plant things in. I washed all those out. You know, I bought some potting soil, some specific potting soil that's good for starting seeds indoors. And, you know, then I think I talked about it last time. All those seed catalogs are pouring in to my mailbox. So I kind of flipped through some of those and selected, you know, the seeds that I wanted to purchase for this year, although I didn't actually need that many because I have, you know, packet upon packet upon packet of seeds from previous seasons, which can still be good over the years. You just have to kind of double check those. But yeah, so it's a great time to be starting and growing things inside. I think for me, because I don't have a lot to do outside right now, it's a great way to be engaged in gardening and to kind of watch the process from the beginning, you know, from sowing that seed and, you know, making sure it's watered. And I walk down there every day to see if anything is germinated and do I have any little babies yet. And, you know, every day I walk down and I'm kind of disappointed for the first week and nothing's popped up. But once it starts, it's kind of exciting to watch those little seeds turn into little seedlings and then the whole process of getting them ready to go outside, hopefully in a month or two, depending on what you're planting. But yeah, lots of things to choose from and lots of different ways to do it. So I'm happy to talk about that if your shy friend wants me to go further.
Okay, we can continue the conversation. And if you have a question about winter sowing or anything else, 314-436-7900. Michelle is our guest. She's been on before. Very popular with the listeners. So if you want to get your questions in, go ahead and do it now. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. It is the season of the sticks.
Definitely.
For sure. And we are going to, we were talking about winter sowing, as in S-O-W-I-N-G, before the break. We're going to take your phone calls as well, 314-436-7900. We will get to those calls in just a minute. But to follow up on the winter sowing thing, what are some mistakes people make while they're trying to grow something indoors and then replant it outdoors?
I guess there's several, and I can speak from experience because it was a lot of years of trial and error, and it's still a lot of trial and error for me in sowing seeds. But one of the things that we have to remember is that not all seeds need light to germinate. So a lot of people have their grow light set up and all of that. And then we have our seeds set up under that the grow light, and then as soon as they germinate and emerge, they start getting really leggy because they're just automatically growing towards that light. So if you start your seeds, sometimes seeds like to be covered with, you know, vermiculite or something like that. Read your package. It should tell you what your seeds like. But really try to keep them in a darker place. So I don't put my my seeds under the grow lights until they've actually germinated and there's leaves. So that's a great one. And then one of the mistakes that I make is that I'll get a giant tray that has like 72 cells in it. So I could have 72 seeds growing in one tray. And then you have all these different types of seeds germinating at different rates with different requirements all in one tray. So it never kind of works out. One seed will germinate quickly, and then it will get really leggy, and you can't really do anything about it. You can't take that top off. Maybe you put a dome over the top to help with the moisture or the humidity. But one seed may germinate while the other still needs that dome on the top of your tray. And then you just have all these different requirements. So if possible, I would do a smaller amount instead of doing, you know, 15 different types of seeds in one tray. Maybe just do two or three that are similar with what their needs are in order to germinate and start growing. And that way you can have a more consistent thing. But that's really the two main things. I can get into some more things if we have some time later about watering and you know, light placement and things like that. But I think those are the two main things when you're starting that can be a problem.
Good to know. Let's go. Well, we lost our phone call. We had our first phone call of the morning. The number is 314-436-7900. When you're thinking about your garden for the spring, maybe you're starting new or you're just going to make some adjustments to it. Can you talk a little bit about the hardscaping that can be done, or, you know, the way rocks are placed, or what kind of elements you can use that are hard that help make it more beautiful, maybe even foster a little bit of growth of something else like moss or something?
Sure. I think that's a really great way to make your gardens a little bit more natural. That's the style of gardening that I prefer over a super manicured look. So using things like boulders, you know, Missouri has a lot of really great limestone that's native to our area. It's relatively inexpensive to get. You know, you would think that, you know, if you wanted some big rocks, you might think that it's an expensive addition to your garden. But the rocks themselves are actually relatively inexpensive. You can go to a lot of nurseries and landscape supply places, and they will have so many different kinds of rocks. I personally am, you know, more attracted to things that are native to our area. But like I said, limestone is a big one around here, and you can get some boulders of all different shapes and sizes. But putting those types of things into your garden, I actually use stumps. I have a little stumpery going in my yard. So old stumps that I find when I'm on a hike is another great way to bring in a more natural element to your garden. And then you can facilitate, or, you know, like try to make that look a little bit more natural by having some moss grow on that rock. Or, you know, a lot of times we'll bring a big boulder to a property, and that next season a fern might be growing out of the side of it, or some columbine or something like that. You can specifically plant into boulders or plant into your stumps, but sometimes just given enough time, there may have been a seed deposited there already. But it's a great way to incorporate those natural elements into your garden by putting a hardscape component, whether it's wood or rock or, you know, I use a little bit of metal sometimes too. Like I think I've talked about it before, a little bit of rusty metal that of things of found items or whatever, but carrots are a good option, or sedges that you can tuck into like a crevice of a rock, or the moss that you can either purchase or, you know, try to get that to grow on your own in the garden. But a lot of times that moss will come on its own if it has the right conditions of shade and moisture and all of that good stuff.
Interesting. All right. The number to call is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. She is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. We'll continue with your phone calls here in a moment. But let's get back to this thought. What kinds of gardens do you like to draw up for people? I mean, is there a specific sort of trend that you're on?
So if it's up to me, like I said, I prefer a more natural, not necessarily native, but certainly natives are involved in the kinds of gardens that I like to draw. It's always an interesting process for me because I, as a designer, want to keep my client in mind, right? You have to keep the expectations and the wants and needs and maintenance that a homeowner is willing to pay for and maintain and manage. I also have a design aesthetic that I prefer to draw, and that is that makes me happy, and that I want to spread throughout St. Louis or wherever my designs are. And then I have, you know, another shareholder, which is Pointer Landscape, that I have to, you know, like we offer planting warranties and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So we have to keep that in mind when we're planting, because we want to make sure that what we're putting in the ground we can stand behind. So, you know, I can't always put in the newest, latest, greatest cultivars because they're not tested and tried and true for us just yet. So I keep that in mind whenever I'm designing. But really for me, you know, getting a and designing a garden that will just get better and better over time, and that people can maintain either on their own or with the help of you know, a staff that comes out and maintains things for them. But those are definitely things I think about. But for me, it's a more a natural aesthetic that I'm driven towards.
How far out do you think when you are creating the design for a garden? I mean, is the timeline 3 years, 5 years, 7 years?
Yeah, so for sure. So I'm thinking when I design, I like to think about that instant garden, right? Because what people are paying for is, you know, they think they have a vision in their head. And when I am designing, I try to keep that in mind, you know, the size of the things that we're going to be installing and how it's going to look initially. But that's not typically a big concern of mine because it typically takes 2, 3, even 5 seasons sometimes for a plant to get to maturity or get to the performance that we are intending. You know, it takes a season or two for it to get rooted in. It takes a season or two to put on that new growth. So I am typically thinking about, you know, that 3 to 4 year mark when I'm designing, but I'm also thinking about that 5 or 10 year mark, right? Like, what do those plants look like when they're mature or near maturity? But you have to think about things like that, because if I put a tree that gets 12 feet wide, 3 foot off the house, because it's only 3 foot when I plant it, you know, if I'm not thinking about that 10 year mark or that mature size of that tree, then I'm doing a disservice to the client. I'm doing a disservice to my design. So really, you have to keep all of those timeframes in mind when you're designing.
That's a lot to think about. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here to answer your questions. We will get to those after a break. The number to call in if you want to ask a question about your garden, your yard. Spring is really not that far away. Lots of things to think about here in the next month or two. What's on your mind? 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline number on KMOX. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined this week by Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. We've been talking a little bit about winter sowing, so growing some seeds indoors to be planted in the spring. We have talked about mistakes people make doing that, and we can continue that discussion here. The number to call in and ask your specific question of Michelle is 314-436-7900. Off the air, Michelle, we were talking about places people can go online to learn things. So what are some resources you prefer?
So this is always an interesting topic for me and you know, for other gardeners that I know, especially people in the industry. And being on this show has kind of sparked this interest to me because I have to tell you all a secret. I don't know everything. In fact, I think last week, okay, it's a secret to, you know, the few hundred people that are listening. Anyway, so last week, I think I said, I don't know twice, to questions. At least once I said, I don't know last week. And the first thing that I did whenever I got home was to Google it. I looked it up on the internet, and I believe that might have been my advice to the caller last week, was to Google it. Which I think is good advice, but knowing which link to click on after you've Googled it is also really important because, you know, there are always 100 different, I'm on Google, there's probably millions of different answers that come up. And one of the things that I like about gardening is that there are a lot of different ways to do things, a lot of trial and error, a lot of word of mouth. You know, it's a lot of different ways to learn about gardening. So when I went home, and I think the question was something about, we were talking about salt being used around our garden beds and around our lawn for all that snow and ice that we had. And somebody called in and asked if there was something that we could put down on the lawn. And I didn't know. I'm not a big lawn person. So I didn't have an answer. So when I went home and I Googled it, you know, there was a ton of different answers that came up. So you know, I just kind of sort through those, and I want to make sure that when you guys are Googling things that you're looking for, you know, like an answer from a university, an answer from a botanical garden, an answer from a reputable source. There's so many people that are out there that can, you know, that can put whatever kind of answer they want out there. So I really would recommend, you know, something local if possible. We have the University of Missouri Extension that has a lot of great resources and local information. The Missouri Botanical Garden is a great resource for a lot of plant stuff and things about gardening. In fact, they have a monthly gardening calendar that's super helpful that I use. But the point is that I don't know everything, and nobody in gardening knows everything. And so you're going to have to at some point, and I do it a lot, I Google a lot of things because I can't keep it all in my brain. And I also, you know, like I use apps, and we can talk about some of those apps that are better than others. And I like I said, I Google a lot. So I just think that just being careful whenever you're Googling your answers and try to use a university or a botanical
reputable
garden.
Yeah. So you're saying I should not pay much attention to Garden Girl 265 on Reddit?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, don't do that. But the answer to the question about what you can put on your lawn to help out with that salt is gypsum. So for whoever that was last week and or 2 weeks ago when I sadly left you hanging without an answer, you can put some gypsum onto your lawn to help with some of the salt and lots of water, which I do think I said. So good luck with that if you are listening this week.
Michelle Reeser-West, taking your phone calls, 314-436-7900. Kathy, good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I'm inquiring about roses. With the rain and everything that we had before the cold, they were really looking differently. And now with all the snow and everything, I'm wondering what to expect in the spring and what should I watch for or do. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, roses are a kind of have a love-hate relationship with roses, but I do think that it might be a little too soon to tell about roses, and it's really too soon to tell on a lot of plants on how they're going to come through this winter. We went into this winter in a drought in this fall, so we had those conditions, and then this winter has been relatively wet and cold, so we've had a lot of snow pile up. We've had some below average temperatures. I don't think, and I haven't really investigated too much, but I don't think that we will see a ton of issues with roses, especially established roses. And one of the good things about roses is in the late winter, early spring, we can give those guys a hard cutback, a big haircut, to help with some of that winter damage and to help with, you know, some of the previous year's pest and disease issues. So I would say that we're probably a few weeks away from really starting to see how the roses bounce back through the winter. On roses, I typically start watching the buds in February, and we will start pruning roses in late February, early March, do those dormant pruning. But I would start looking at the buds, here in the couple weeks. Look at the stems. They should be, you know, should start greening up a bit, should be a bright green color. Anytime they're dull or anytime they're like a brownish color, that's either a dead or diseased or damaged branch that needs to be pruned out. So I would give it, again, probably 2, 3, even 4 weeks, depending on weather. And you can walk out and kind of look at those buds. You're going to want to see those buds starting to swell up. Those are the leaf buds. And once those start swelling up, you can start seeing the branches green up. Then you can start pruning and doing all your dormant stuff to it.
You mentioned love-hate relationships. Well, Valentine's Day is coming up.
That's right.
And so the price of roses is about to go sky high. We'll get to that later. All right, let's go back to the phones. Claudette, you're up next with Michelle on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, hi, Michelle. Thank you. I have a piece of property that lines a rock road, and I need to replace some trees along that road. So it needs to be some trees that can deal with the rock dust, probably minimum vegetation, minimum care, because it's about 200 or 300 yards from any watering source. And I'm really not too fond of things like cedars and arborvitae. So I was trying to see what alternatives you might recommend.
So both of the two that you mentioned were evergreen. Are you looking for an evergreen solution or just a good solution in general?
A good solution in general, something that can be of interest, can provide a barrier to the rock dust, maybe a little bit of privacy, just something that is can be of interest. But also, since it's on an easement, that can't grow like 20 feet tall.
Sure. So something a little bit smaller or slow growing. Are there like power lines or things that you need to think about or no?
Yes, it is. It is actually on the electric easement. So I do have to worry about how tall they grow.
Yeah. So you'll probably want to look into some kind of an understory tree. You know, most of our big shade trees and even a lot of our evergreens are going to get too big for that area. So I would definitely look into maybe some native understory trees, because they're going to be able to take, you know, some harsher conditions or be able to adapt a little bit better than some of our more ornamental trees. Like I think about, you know, those smaller ornamental trees, and people talk about the, you know, crab apples and cherries and all the ones that are, you know, bloom and are pretty, and they are pretty. They do bloom really well, but they don't always hold up well along roadways or in those types of conditions.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, off the top of my head, I like something that would be blooming and something that is native could be like a serviceberry tree. Those make semi-decent roadside trees. They don't get really big. There's a couple different varieties. You could get a tree form that's just a single stem that looks more like an upright tree. And then they also have some that are multi-stem that are more shrubby in appearance. One of the things that I like about service berries is that they're one of the first things to bloom in the spring. It's a white bloom. It's a cute little delicate flower, but it's pretty profuse, and it puts on a really good show. And then those white flowers turn into red berries that are both edible to humans. They're very tasty. People make jam and jellies out of those berries. I don't even make it out of the garden when I eat mine. But the birds also love them, so it's beneficial to the birds as well. But that's a good native option to plant along a roadway.
Okay, are they easy to establish?
For sure. They're super simple. They don't need a lot of water. They can tolerate a little bit of moisture. They can tolerate drought. It's a really, really easy tree. Low maintenance. It doesn't need a lot of pruning or anything like that either.
Okay. Can I bother you for a second alternative?
Sure. I think, if you're looking for something small, I think about other kind of natives, you have the redbud or the dogwood. Those don't always love it. I mean, the dogwood is our native Missouri tree, but it doesn't actually love it here, especially when it's out in the wide open.
Right.
So those probably wouldn't be a go-to. An ornamental tree that I've actually been really impressed with lately that's not a native is a crabapple. And I can't believe I'm saying this on air that I'm recommending a crabapple, but it's called a firebird crab. And it's kind of an alternative. People planted a lot of Tina crabs, which are smaller crab tree that the Tina crab gets a lot of pest and disease issues. So I don't like using those. But the firebird crab is small. It stays very small. It's really cute. It's a spring bloomer. I don't know how well it would do on a roadside. I haven't used it in that regard, but it's been a very strong performer for us in those smaller types of trees. So that could be an interesting option.
You don't have anything other, another native. I kind of would like to stick with natives if I could.
Yeah, I think just depending on how much room you have, you could use. There's some cultivars of Osage Orange that people are coming out with that are thornless. Those are really good street trees. That's an interesting like alternative that you won't see very often, but they would have those at local nurseries. That would be, I would totally love to plant that as a street tree. If I had a gravel road, that's the one I would pick.
Oh, okay. Well, terrific. I thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate your information.
Thank you for calling in, Claudette. We appreciate you. This is a show that's at your service. So if you have a question for Michelle about your garden, about the upcoming spring and your backyard or front yard and landscaping, she works for Pointer Landscaping, and she has a lot of information and resources to share with us. I have a couple of follow-up questions on things you said, but we're going to do that after the break. Meantime, you can call in right now, 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. That's right. Good Saturday morning in late January. It is gorgeous outside. It's going to be almost 50 degrees today. It's a good time to think about gardening. We have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping here to answer your questions. What are you concerned about? We've had a couple of really good questions so far, and hopefully we can continue to provide this service. The number is 314-436-7900. I wanted to follow up on the last answer, a couple of things you said, to just learn a little more about them. One is an understory tree. Mm-hmm. What exactly is that?
Well, understory just means that it's typically under the canopy of the woods or forests. So you have our big shade trees or the large trees like oaks or hickories or maples that get really big and take up most of the canopy. Understory trees are typically trees that are underneath that that canopy. So a lot of times they are on the edges of the woodland, but they're also sprinkled throughout the woodlands. But they're typically really small, and they kind of thrive at the at that lower level of the woods, and they don't get that big. But that's kind of like their nature is just to be, kind of 15, 20 feet. A little bit thinner. I think about understory. When I think about understory, I think about, like I said, red buds and dogwoods or, even like pawpaw trees or things like that that are just kind of sprinkled throughout our woodlands or on the edges of our woods.
And they make good street trees, as you call them.
They can make good street trees. And really, it's because of their size. I mean, when I think about street trees, often these trees are planted in the little hell strips or the little 2 or 3 foot section of grass or dirt between the road and a sidewalk. Street trees, I believe what our previous caller was was talking about something along a gravel road, but it also may have those overhead power lines that you have to contend with. They may have, you know, certainly in the city, if you have a street tree, you have to think about cars parking beside them. And just to mention that Osage orange that I was talking about, Osage orange has a fruit, and the cultivars that I'm talking about are thornless and fruitless. A regular Osage orange probably wouldn't be a great fruit or a street tree because of those big, you know, 3 or 4 inch fruits that would fall onto our cars or sidewalks and can be a tripping hazard. But they are a tough tree and low maintenance with the low pest and disease issues. But I would definitely, if you're going to use those as a street tree, look for the thornless and fruitless variety of those, or you might have an issue. But yeah, so street trees, it's a big, it's, you know, we talk about it probably not enough. I know the city of St. Louis has a program where if you want a tree, you can go on their website and they have a list of trees that you can choose, and they'll come out if you have enough space and it's the right environment. They will plant the tree for free. My last house that I lived in the city, they wouldn't do that because my hill strip, the little strip, was only like, I don't know, 18 inches or less than 2 feet, which is not great growing conditions. But to, you know, you have to take into consideration all of those things around it. And when you pick a street tree, you have to, you know, think about that it's probably going to have a constricted root zone because it has a street on one side and a sidewalk on the other. You're not going to want to have to prune it a lot because, you know, that's a pain, and it opens your tree up to pest and disease. So you want something like an understory tree that will stay, you know, below those power lines.
I do want to note the Osage orange tree. Mm-hmm. I did Google that during the break.
Yeah, so
that
just want you all to know, Scott has a computer at his station, and he Googles things. I have a microphone and a brain. That's it.
That's funny. Okay, but I did find one of those trees that is in Virginia at what's called Patrick Henry's Red Hill.
Okay.
So it's a museum.
Mm-hmm.
It is massive. It is the old. They say it's the oldest or largest of its species in North America. It's 350 years old.
Wow!
It's an Osage orange tree that is. It's not indigenous to Virginia. It's from here. You said, right?
It's native to all different ranges within the United States.
Okay. So yeah. Anyway, it says not. This one says not indigenous to the region. The tree is believed to have been passed along Western Native American trade networks. So this was, again, this tree was planted 350 years ago, and it is massive. So maybe try to find one that's not going to be that big or old.
Right. And I mean, that tree's been around for 350 right. years. So street trees don't typically last or grow that long. They have a lot more issues than that. But the other thing that you have to think about on a street tree, I mean, you've all walked down a city street or where there's a massive oak tree planted and the sidewalk is popping up and it's, you know, like kind of taking over the space. So those are certainly things that you need to keep in mind when you're picking a tree for those types of spaces.
Some of the interesting topics we've already covered: street trees, one of them, winter sowing, S-O-W-I-N-G, as in growing seeds indoors or seeding and then growing things indoors, then planting them outdoors in the spring. We've also talked about hardscapes, rocks, and other things you can put in a garden that look cool and also do things for the garden. We're going to continue these topics and whatever you're interested in. 314-436-7900. You're listening to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. And joining us for this hour is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. She's been on before and has a wide range of knowledge about gardening, about trees, planting, anything you can think of that you want to know. She is a great resource. We're going to talk about some additional resources that she likes to go to. The number to call in to ask your specific question is 314-436-7900. We're going to start with Bob. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
First off, go Bills.
Yeah,
I knew you were a fan. Hey, my question is moles. I was really surprised to find that after the snow melted that my front yard is tore up with mole trails. I didn't realize that they were a wintertime pest also. I've had an infestation of these things the last 2 years, and I've killed or trapped over 30 of them, and I'm just a little subdivision lot, so it's quite extensive. Is there any, other than the trapping, is there anything that I should be doing to try to deter these little pests?
Good luck. They are awful little critters, and I think they are becoming, you know, something that we're talking more and more about. Seems like, I don't know if they're being becoming like more prevalent or if it's just something we're complaining about more, but I do feel like I'm hearing about it and, you know, talking with clients about it more and more. We don't particularly do anything in-house. We typically would recommend an exterminator or something to one of our clients. But, you know, this is one of those things that goes right along with gardening and all of the different techniques and approaches that people have used and shared over the years. There's just so many different ways. I think trapping is probably the most effective. You know, there's all kinds of products out there that you can put, you know, pellets in the tunnels or sprays that you can kind of spray methodically throughout your yard, where you start at one end and you basically push them out of your property. But by pushing them out of your property, you're pushing them most likely into your neighbors and making it their problem. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things that that you will just continue, maybe not every year have a problem with. It seems like 1 year somebody might have that problem in their yard and then they don't see them again for several seasons and then they appear again. They do feed on grubs and earthworms and all of that thing. So if you want to try to go that route, I mean, you can do a grub control treatment that is not... you know, that's not 100% effective because it also, I mean, it just kills the grub. It doesn't kill the earthworm and the many, many, many other insects that they eat. But it can help a little bit. It's just, it's honestly, it's just one of those things that you have to keep at when they're active. And they can be very active throughout the winter. They still need to feed. It's surprising that they've done it recently because the ground has been so frozen. But I assume that as soon as that ground is, you know, workable for them, that they're out foraging for little snacks.
Yeah, I guess the snow provided some kind of an some insulation, and the ground might have been, you know, soft underneath, because like you say, when the snow melted, my front yard was just tore up, and I was shocked. I've never had them during the winter, but have had terrible battles with them during the spring and summer. But I'm at my wit's end. But I don't know if there's a magic bullet for doesn't sound like there's a magic bullet for any of it.
Is definitely not a magic bullet for moles, and I do think that trapping and, you know, eradicating them is the best way. I mean, I haven't personally used any of the pellets or anything like that. In my yard, we were in the trapping category, but yeah, it's just one of those things that there's so many different ways and different approaches that people use, and it's just a constant battle.
Yeah, I imagine if you could figure out something, and you'd be a millionaire on it, because they're a menace. So, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Great show.
Thanks for calling in, Bob. The number is 314-436-7900. Yeah, we've had a couple of shows that have organically turned into moles and voles because so many people have to deal with them. And I did, when I had a large yard, have a bad mole problem. They're just a pain. I mean,
yeah. Jerks.
They're such jerks.
They are jerks.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We have another Bob. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I heard the lady talking about crabapple trees a little bit before, and I just wanted to pass on some information to her. Years ago, I bought a miniature crabapple tree, and we took it down to the country where my mother-in-law lived and planted it, but in that pot was about a 6-inch sprout next to the main trunk of the crabapple tree. And I took it out, brought it back, and I planted it out here in our backyard. and that thing grew into about a 15-foot tree and had crab apples on it every year. My wife used to make jelly out of the crab apples, and it was good jelly. And she did that for several years until it got to be too much work, and finally the tree wound up dying after about 15 years. But I just wanted to pass that on to her.
Yeah, I do appreciate that story. I tend to be a bit of a crabapple hater until I hear stories like that. And I know that they can, you know, they're beautiful trees when they're healthy. And I hear stories of people making that jelly and other things with some of the fruit. So I always appreciate hearing those types of good stories to remind me that there's good in all the plants. I can get a little, you know, snobby about things. But part of my problem with crab apples is just what you said. It you know, after about 15 years, they tend to, you know, die back or have a lot of pest and disease issues. So thank you for sharing that story. It was a good one. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Bob, with that. We'll go next to Joan. Joan, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about hyacinth bean vine. I picked up some seed pods on various walks around the neighborhood, and I have a little bowl full of them, and I'm just wondering how I go about treating these or when I plant them. Do I just plant the pod with the seed inside, or do I take the seeds out? When do I plant them?
So you have the pod that has the beans inside, if I'm understanding you correctly. And if that's the case, then you'll want to open up that pod and take those seeds or beans out of that pod. You don't necessarily have to do anything with those beans. You could directly sow them into your garden. I typically recommend with most beans or legumes or things that have that harder coating to soak them overnight in some water, just to kind of to loosen up that outer covering before you plant them out in the garden. Again, you don't have to do that. Nature will take its course and do it on its own. It just helps a mm-hmm. little bit to kind of jumpstart that process. And then I would definitely do that after the first frost, after the danger of frost has passed. And for us in Missouri, it's typically around tax day, around April 15th, give or take. I typically like to fudge that line a little bit. I'm a bit of a risk taker, especially if I have a lot of seeds. I might go ahead and put, if we're having a warmer spring than typical, or it seems like we may be past that frost point, I might go ahead and put those seeds out a little bit early. And then if we do have a bit of a frost, those plants typically aren't large enough yet that it's not difficult to cover them if we do get a frost. But typically around mid-April is when our last frost is, so I would wait until that. And then I would plant them next to a structure. They're going to want something to climb on. I've done it on a chain link fence before. You could do a trellis. They'll pretty much grab onto anything. So it doesn't take much, but they can be quite prolific growers. So a few seeds will go quite a long way. So I would definitely use a bit of reserve when planting seeds, or they might take over. But they're beautiful.
Okay, that's good to know.
I hope that goes well for you.
All right. Thank you so much for the information.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in, Joan. The number to reach us, to reach Michelle with your specific question, is 314-436-7900. We'll be back and taking those phone calls, if I can say it, in just a moment on KMOX. And right now on The Voice of St. Louis, we have the voice of Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your gardening questions this morning on the Garden Hotline. And that number is 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Carol. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I've got a question for Michelle and really any of the other wise listeners here this morning. We have a bird feeder in our backyard directly above a rock landscaping. And, you know, birds love it, and the cardinals, you know, grab out the sunflower seeds, et cetera. But I always end up with a crop of sprouted seed in my rock area. And I was just wondering what you would recommend for that. I can use Roundup to, you know, kill them.
You could. It's kind of like so you could use chemical, right? But you're under bird feeder. So for me, that doesn't... kind of go together. You could put down a pre-emergent. Again, that's chemical, but pre-emergent would not allow those seeds to germinate. That is also a chemical. There are types of liquid pre-emergent. So if you did want to go that route, you could do a liquid pre-emergent that the birds would not eat. We sometimes use a corn gluten, which is like an organic, quote unquote, pre-emergent, which is kind of like an oxymoron, but it does help us a little bit with weed suppression. You could try that. That is granular, but it is corn, so the birds might eat more of that than helps with the weed suppression. What we tend to do on our properties that we manage is, you know, once every couple of weeks or once a month, we take our backpack blower and we just blow as much as we can out of those cracks and crevices around all of those rocks and try to get as many of those seeds out. So if you have a blower or something that you could kind of get as many of those out as possible before they germinate. And again, that's just something we do every week or two. It just keeps all that stuff clean. It's not a perfect method because you're not going to get every single seed. And then, you know, over time that will build up. So at least once or twice a season, you can kind of get in there with a soil knife or moving some of that rock around in combination with, you know, maybe that blower and just by hand kind of eradicating some of that buildup of the seed and dirt and stuff that just kind of gets in there over time. That can help because most of the time seeds are going to germinate whether they're soil or not, especially some of that bird seed. But that soil and all of that debris in there will help to germinate some of those seeds, and it will help them root in once they do germinate and get established.
The good news is that they're easy to pull.
Correct.
I mean, because there's no real soil. It's just like old dirt and seed holes.
Yeah. So there's no great answer for you other than it's just a maintenance thing. It's just, you know, a kind of a constant battle or a constant. It's not a battle per se. It's just an item that you have to put on your task list to, you know, to either remember to put some pre-emergent down or clean it out every few weeks. But
sure,
it also looks really good. I love, you know, when we have a nice little rock area with some bird feeders around. I think it's, you know, aesthetically it looks nice. It just has a little bit of work involved.
Exactly. And, you know, we love seeing, you know, and identifying the birds. I mean, it's always cool to see what comes to the backyard.
Yeah, it's a definite positive that I enjoy about gardening is that it comes along with all the birds and critters that we get to learn about alongside the flowers.
Well, now how about a squirrel preventer? That would be next.
Don't even get me started on the squirrels. I lived in the city and trying to grow tomatoes in the city. The squirrels and I went around and round. So
we do have the bird feeder as squirrel proof as possible by using a slinky, you know, on the shepherd's crook. That's really effective.
Those are some more jerks. We were talking about those moles earlier. Squirrels and moles are on my
list.
And
chipmunks. Yep. Well, you know, God's little critters. Okay. Well, hey, thanks for the help.
Yeah, good luck.
Have a good day.
Great question, Carol. Thanks for calling in to 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. We have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping answering your questions. Up next is Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, I want to put some gypsum on my yard, but I don't know what rate to buy that at.
That is a great question. With chemical or with anything that you're putting down, I always recommend when you purchase it to just follow the instructions on the label. It's going to depend on, you know, a lot of things, the size of the yard, what rate that you're going to put it down at. If, you know, there's different application rates. Sometimes there's a spring rate versus a fall rate. So I would just recommend reading that label. The label, as they say, the label is law. So I haven't applied that product before. So I would, that's what I would recommend, is just reading and following the instructions.
And it's, okay.
And it's typically like you'll have to figure out the square footage or however much area that you're applying it to. And they'll give you like, a cup or a half a cup per, per square footage or whatever. So it's relatively simple. You'll just look for that label.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve, for calling in. Up next, we have Tina. Tina, you are on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question about, I got three blue azaleas that I just got delivered to my house, and they're from Oregon, and I want to plant them. When is the best time to plant these?
Well, you can pretty much plant anytime the ground is not frozen.
Okay.
Did you say you have blue azaleas?
Yeah, blue.
Oh, I'm interested in that.
And I have an orange one coming, too.
I've seen the orange ones. I've not seen a blue one. So that's going to be interesting. You'll have to call back in the spring and give us an update on that. Yes.
The blue violet, blue barren, blue. They call it a rhododendron, but it looks exactly like an azalea. I guess a rhododendron and azalea are the same family. I don't know. But.
Just to get technical, all azaleas are rhododendrons, but not all rhododendrons are azaleas. So, so you can plant them. I mean, this week could be a great time to plant them. We're in the 50s. The ground is not frozen. It's a little bit wet right now for me for planting. We've just had all that that snow melting. So if it were me, I'd probably wait a little bit longer.
I think I will too.
I think you could wait until February, mid-February, just to kind of make sure that we're past all this this frozen and a little bit drier. I'm just not a big fan of planting when when the soil is super saturated. So I would wait if you can until February. When are they going to be delivered soon? Do you have some time to?
They are here. I got them in starter pots, and they're here, and they look really good. They came. Got delivered a couple days ago. So, but when I plant these, what do you suggest putting around them? Should I get some different type of soil other than?
So I always try to recommend that we're planting plants in your native soil. If you're augmenting the soil around it, it's typically just a short term thing. Or once they grow out of that hole that you have nicely prepared for them with all that gushy soil and amendments, then they're no longer going to have all that cushy growth. Their roots are going to grow right out of that, and then they're back into that native soil. So if we can plant into our native soil, and then maybe we help out with with some amendments to the soil, that might be good. I don't typically recommend a lot of fertilizer at time of planting, mostly because the grower has already put a ton of fertilizer on the top of that pot. We use a lot of, when we plant, we use a lot of Turfis, which is a soil conditioner that helps with drainage. Azaleas do prefer to not have wet feet. So if you have a clay soil, I would recommend a Turfis, which
can
is a soil.
Can you buy that anywhere? Or?
Yeah, I think that most, like Kirk,
so
I know
that. How do you spell that?
I'm sorry, who sell it?
How do you spell that?
Oh, Turfis. It's Turface. It's actually used a lot for baseball fields and stuff for drainage, but we use it a lot. Okay. Mobot uses it a lot in their planting, but it helps with drainage, especially in our clay compacted soils. And then we use a low grade fertilizer. It's actually just a 333 fertilizer, but the main thing that's in ours is we have, it has a little bit of conditioner in it, but it also has this mycorrhizal fungus, which helps with establishing roots. So if you have some kind of like a root stimulator or mycorrhizal fungi that you could do, but it's really not necessarily to plant with a fertilizer. So just really that soil conditioner is what I would recommend. That Turfus would be a great addition to any planting, especially in clay soil.
Okay. And then one more question. So since this hard winter we had, I have a deciduous azalea and I have two other regular azaleas. Are they going to be hurt leaf damage by this, you think, or are they going to be all right?
The leaf should, you know, I think it's always common for there to be winter damage on leaves. But most of the time, I mean, if we do a spring fertilization, azaleas is one of the few plants that I often recommend fertilizing in the spring. And we use Hollytone a lot for that. So if you haven't used that before, that's an organic fertilizer that's really good for your rhododendrons, azaleas. A lot of evergreens prefer that type of fertilizer, but Hollytone. In the spring, that would help them kind of come through that winter. And you could do that right when the buds are starting to break or right kind of late winter, early spring.
Got it. All right. Thank you for your help.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Tina. 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline. We'll take more of your phone calls in just a moment on KMOX. You're tuned in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined once again by Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions this morning about gardening topics as we inch closer to spring, more like sprint. It'll be here right before 6 weeks. What?
Yeah, I just said on my way in this morning, I cannot wait to start complaining about how hot it is. So I'm ready.
Okay. Good to know. The number to call, we've got a few more minutes left in the hour to take your phone calls. So jump in with your question at 314-436-7900. We've covered some really interesting topics in the last hour and 40 minutes. Let's get to another one with Larry. Good morning, Larry. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I don't have a question, but I got a hopeful solution, I hope, to squirrels. I'm not a fan of squirrels either. Cayenne pepper. Mix that in with your seeds. That slows them down, at least in my neighborhood.
I mean, a lot of people talk about cayenne pepper as a helpful deterrent to a lot of things. So I have not personally used that, but I hear that a lot. So
it does work, well, at least here. And I don't know, there are grocery stores, and I can't think of the name of the street, south of the botanical gardens, the Vietnamese grocery stores, it's cheaper there, so that's a good place to get it. And then the second one is a slinky. I saw on Facebook, put a slinky around your shepherd's hooks.
Yeah, that's what the previous caller said, that she had a slinky on.
Oh, I didn't hear
on
that.
I'd never heard of that. So that's a great recommendation. And a lot of our deer repellents and rabbit repellents are capsaicin based. So I know that is a big ingredient in a lot of our, especially the more natural products that people are selling, is that capsaicin base, which is basically pepper. So thanks for your call.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to spring as well.
Thanks, Larry. 314-436-7900. We only have a few more minutes to get your call in. So hop on the line if you have a question or a comment or a solution. Michelle, we were talking earlier about resources and apps and things that maybe people don't know about. So let's continue that conversation. What are a couple more that you like to use?
Yeah, so again, I'll say it again. I don't know everything, and especially in the moment, you know, like I'll be with a client or they'll ask a question or you guys call in and I'll either have a brain freeze or I just, I just won't know. So I have to use a lot of tools in my job, and it's one of the things that I like about horticulture is that I'm constantly able to learn and sometimes relearn information. But there are, you know, we talk about AI a lot in a lot of other areas of our lives, and a lot of people don't think about it, but we are using AI, or we can use AI in our gardening, and we do that in the form of apps. And a lot of that is helpful for ID. So I do it a lot. I'm not always great at weed identification, and that's not one. And, I didn't take any weed classes in college. So sometimes I have a difficult time identifying weeds, and I use an app. I use actually a couple of apps, and the most easy one that we have, and a lot of people don't realize it, but if you have an iPhone and you take a picture on your iPhone, you go back to your photos. If you swipe up on that photo, your photo section on your iPhone will automatically help you try to identify that plant. It has to be kind of like a close-up photo for it to recognize, but it uses AI, and it searches through all of these photos that it has in its cache, and it can help you. It's not always 100% accurate, but it typically gets you close. We had a guy come in, one of our design build sales guys that are not always proficient at plant identification, came into my office the other day with a photo. And we knew that it was a viburnum of some kind, but we couldn't tell from the photo. And I said, hey, why don't you use your Photos app? And he had no idea that he could just click on that. And that got us closer. It gave us a couple different options. And then from that, we could go research it a little bit further in order for us to identify exactly what type of viburnum that was. There are a couple other plant ID apps that are getting better. One that I use that I find is pretty accurate is called Picture This. There is a trial for that, and I think that they make you pay for it if you keep using it. But I think it's relatively inexpensive. But there are a lot of apps out there. Again, these apps are not 100% accurate, but it's a great way if you can snap a picture, an up close picture of a leaf or the flower or part of the reproductive structure. It's a great way to get started. Right, it may give you a few options, and then from there you can Google or do a little bit more research. But I honestly I don't have a problem admitting it. I do rely on some of those apps from time to time because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of plants and species of plants, and it's impossible for anybody to know all of them. But I think that, you know, we've come a long way with AI. We've come a long way with these plant identification apps. They, even just a few years ago, they were, you know, you would snap a picture and it would tell you something wildly different. So, but yeah, they're very helpful tools.
Oh, come on. You have an encyclopedia for a brain.
Yeah, I wish I did.
All right, let's go to Dee Dee. You're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Hello. I want a flowering vine. I have a clematis already, but I want a flowering vine to climb up my side of my house. There's a window close to it, and I want the name of it. Could you give me that?
Is it full sun or shade, or what kind of conditions do you have?
It's on the south side of my house.
Okay, so you have a full sun condition, so that gives you a lot more options as far as vines go. One that I really like is we do have a native honeysuckle vine that's really beautiful, and the hummingbirds really like it. It also smells really good. So that could be an option. That one does.
What kind of vine?
It's a honeysuckle or native honeysuckle vine.
Okay.
But that one's a good one, especially if you have a trellis or something already. And then really there's a ton of, you know, you can do a lot of things, especially with annual vines, if you want to change it up every year. Clematis, you said you've already got that. So, that's a good one. We were just talking about that hyacinth bean just a few minutes ago. That one's really beautiful and can grow.
Hyacinth is a vine. Hyacinth is a vine.
Hyacinth bean. It's a vine. And you can buy that as a plant, or you can just pop a seed in the ground for that one.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks for calling in, Dee Dee. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. We have one more segment to go. We will get to the remaining phone calls in the next few minutes. So if you've already called in, Hang on. We'll get to you next on the Garden Hotline. Good Saturday morning to you. Michelle Reeser-West is here answering your questions at 314-436-7900. This is the last chance segment. Let's get back to the phones with your questions. And a name I like, Scott, you're on the air.
Good morning. We have two green giant arborvitae or evergreens in our backyard, probably 4 years old, probably about 20 feet tall. We planted them about 8 to 10 feet apart. One of them, it looks super healthy. The other one is really starting to thin out. I've applied some root stimulator last summer, but I'm just a little concerned. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they're planted close together and one is performing well and one isn't. So, I mean, there could be a number of different reasons for that. Sometimes, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, one of them got more dried out than the other, even if it was just for a day or two, somehow it got more water or the irrigation maybe hits it a little bit differently. I'm not sure what your watering conditions are there. Another thing is that arborvitae and a lot of evergreens can be affected by winter winds. So if the one that is struggling is maybe getting the brunt of the wind coming through, that could affect the overall health of the tree. And it's hard to tell without seeing it or without knowing that the soil conditions, which could also be a contributing factor, even when things are planted, you know, 8 or 10 feet apart, you could have, you know, some soil conditions that aren't quite the same. Or they could have been, you know, planted a little bit differently, and that could have affected things. So without being able to see the tree, I would say that definitely that root stimulator is a great start. Arborvitae don't typically need a lot of fertilization, and they definitely don't like an acid-based fertilizer, which is what we use typically for a lot of our evergreens. So if you're looking for a fertilizer for the arborvitae plant tone, there's a holly tone is what we typically use for evergreens and azaleas and stuff, and that is the more acidic fertilizer. But there is a product that's a natural organic, but it's just plant tone. And I would use that. You know, springtime is a great time for fertilization, waiting until things start to wake up a little bit.
Sure.
You know, in fall, even going into fall, we don't want to, you know, sometimes we have to be careful fertilizing in the fall because we want the tree to not make more, right? We want that tree to go dormant and take some of that fertilizer in. So typically the fall would be a lighter application, and we want to do that, you know, time it correctly so that we're not asking that tree to push out new growth and then it gets damaged through the winter. Right. But this spring, I would definitely say I would get some fertilizer and just make sure you're getting consistent watering. Arborvitae can naturally thin out. They are evergreen, but they do have a natural needle drop, and they can get some inner needle browning, and they can lose some of that those inner needles throughout the winter and then push out some new growth in the spring. But that's definitely what I would work on. A little bit of fertilization and some, make sure we have consistent watering. And then you might think about doing a soil test to see if there's something going on underground that we can't see.
I can do that. Are there any funguses associated with those?
They don't typically, the green giants don't typically have a lot of pest and disease issues, especially if they're, you know, they're 3 or 4 years old. I would suspect it has something to do with planting and, you know, some kind of conditions from the time of planting, whether it was, you know, we've had a couple of drought, fall droughts where, you know, things didn't get watered as much as they would have liked going into winter. And that really has affected some of our arborvitae. But no, arborvitae, especially those green giants, don't tend to have any fungal issues.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Scott. Well, we're about to wrap up here, Michelle. earlier in the program, you said you had a love-hate relationship with roses.
Yeah.
With Valentine's Day coming up, I'm just curious why that is.
Because they're thorny and they poke me. Roses, you know, I love them. They're beautiful. They are a symbol of love. They just don't always do great here in Missouri. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of maintenance. They have a lot of pest and disease issues. They take a lot of pruning. They're heavy feeders, which means you have to fertilize them all the time. Their pest and disease issues can be transmitted from plant to plant. So when you're pruning, you got to make sure you clean your pruners between every single plant. And it's just, it's finicky. They're high maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And I sell maintenance. I do maintenance for a living, but I actually would prefer not to do that much maintenance, you know? So I would prefer to pick plants that I don't have to mess with that much. And if I, you know, maybe when I retire and I have more time on my hands to mess with roses, I might change my mind. But right now I'm not there yet, Scott.
You're not there yet.
No.
Finicky, high maintenance.
Yes.
Sounds like a few people I know.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love them. Yeah. I don't want them. I'll go to the gardens to look at them. I'll go somewhere else to look at roses. I'll buy them for my loved ones. I'll buy them for my mom. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle Reeser West from Pointer Landscaping. Any final thoughts?
No. I think
you're exhausted.
I really am happy to be here every week. It's a humbling thing to sit here with you all and to, you know, get to use my brain in a way that I don't always get to use it. You know, I don't know what people are going to say when they call in. And it's kind of like a fun thing for me to get to, you know, to help educate people. It's one of the things I love about my job is sharing my knowledge of plants and my love of gardening with other people. And I'm just, you know, always honored to be here with everybody.
Well, we enjoy having you, and I know the listeners do, and we'll have you back soon.
Yep, a couple weeks.
Already scheduled. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. Have a great weekend, and go Bills!